Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. The Able Trust, believing growth of Florida's economy depends on a diverse and inclusive workforce. The Able Trust works with the business community to include talented Floridians with disabilities as vital team members. More information is at abletrust.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
Governor Rick Scott is ordering sexual harassment training while fending off questions about his initial pick for the Public Service Commission.
So as I said, I'm going to do everything I can. That's why I put out this executive order, but I'm not going to comment on conversations I have with members of the legislature.
The Florida Department of Corrections has several big funding priorities this year, but will the cost of settling three prison lawsuits hurt their budget chances in 2018?
We need to be just realistic about it and know that if we're having to spend more on medical, then I'm not sure we can do some of these other things, unless we plan on giving more money to this area.
And the scourge of opioid addiction is putting ever more strain on an already stressed foster care system.
It is absolutely an epidemic, and our program and our system is bursting at the seams because of it.
I'm Lynn Hatterin for Tom Flanagan, and you're listening to Capitol Report. With the 2018 legislative session looming, state officials are doing their level best to defuse a widening sexual harassment scandal. Nick Evans reports the governor is ordering new training at state agencies.
Harassment allegations have already led to one resignation, and the ongoing investigation into Senator Jack Latvala is threatening to derail Senate priorities in an election year. The Clearwater Republican has been stripped of his chairmanship on the powerful Appropriations Committee. In his replacement, Fleming Island Republican Rob Bradley says lawmakers are going to consider not just the allegations against Latvala, but also his conduct since they came to light.
Because I think it's important not only that there is zero tolerance for sexual misconduct and verbal abuse, but there also be zero tolerance for any behavior that leads to one feeling like they should not come forward or feeling intimidated.
In public statements after six women came forward anonymously to Politico, Latvala made lightly veiled allusions to out one of his accusers and suggested the allegations were an attempt to undermine his campaign for governor. The woman has since come forward. Rachel Perrin Rogers is a staffer in Trilby Republican Senator Wilton Simpson's office. And Plantation Democratic Senator Lauren Book has filed an official complaint over what she sees as Latvala's attempt to intimidate an accuser. Intentional or not, Latvala's campaign is reeling and fundraising is dried up. His chief GOP rival, Agriculture Commissioner Adam Putnam, is blunt about what should happen next.
Look, I've been very clear that everyone has a right to work in a place where they're respected, where they're safe. That includes the state capitol. That includes any business in America. And it's my understanding that the results of the Senate investigation could come out as early as this week. And if they're true, he should go.
Meanwhile, Governor Rick Scott is attempting to get ahead of the controversy by ordering training at state agencies.
I put out an executive order a little while ago that basically, for all our executive agencies, has a reporting process, an investigation process, a training process. All of it is do everything we can to protect people that work in state government.
But that hasn't completely insulated the governor from scrutiny. Scott's selection for the Public Service Commission, former Republican Representative Rich Workman, failed to gain Senate confirmation because the chair of the committee refused to bring him up for a vote. Fort Myers Republican Senator Lisbeth Beniquisto contends Workman's conduct toward her at a 2016 charity event was vulgar and inappropriate. Beniquisto met with Scott shortly after the nomination, but pressed over whether Workman was part of the conversation, Scott refuses to offer details.
So as I said, I'm going to do everything I can. That's why I put out this executive order. But I'm not going to comment on conversations I have with members of the legislature.
Workman has since removed himself from consideration, but says he doesn't recall the incident. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Nick Evans.
Outstanding prison lawsuits will mean less money to spend on Florida Department of Corrections priorities. That's the message from the new Florida Senate Budget Chair. Sasha Cordner reports.
The governor's proposed public safety budget for the 2018 legislative session is expected to cost $5.3 billion. About half would go to the Florida Department of Corrections. The corrections agency has in the past asked for millions of dollars to cover the cost of maintenance repairs, deal with staffing shortages, and address mental health services. And Florida Prison Chief Julie Jones is making similar asks this year.
The governor securing Florida's future budget focuses primarily on ensuring the department can continue to meet and expand health services to the individuals in our custody. This keeps us in line with national standards and our constitutional responsibilities. Funding recommendations also include infrastructure investments, contraband interdiction tools to create safer prisons, and also programming aimed at reducing recidivism.
But among the biggest funding requests are settlement costs for three different prison lawsuits. One would ensure all facilities are ADA compliant. That means $6 million will go toward ensuring correctional institutions are more accessible to inmates with disabilities. But that's just this year. Jones says lawmakers will be on the hook for $2 million more the following year. Another $19.3 million settlement agreement addresses funding the treatment of about 500 inmates with hepatitis C. Currently, the prison agency does not have any funding for that.
The department is actively engaging our stakeholders on this issue in order to find cost-effective solutions. And this includes our partner state agencies, our national colleagues, and pharmaceutical companies. We're actively meeting with pharmaceutical companies who manufacture these drugs and have urged them to join us to address this critical public safety issue.
And a bulk of the money is $78 million to cover the cost of better care for mental health patients. That includes funding for hundreds of staffing positions at these institutions and facility upgrades and repairs. According to Jones, the $78 million is just the start of what's needed to fulfill that settlement.
Instead of trying to present a huge number to the legislature, the governor's office was very tough on me in trying to get me to realistically parse out over three fiscal years the ultimate cost to resolve that lawsuit. And that's what this budget is the request for year one. Year two, 38, and then year three is 18, I think.
Jones says because this is only a negotiated settlement agreement, the final cost could be even higher. And Fleming Island Republican Senator Rob Bradley says given that, this will not help create a balanced budget.
Because there is not sufficient revenues to handle everything that is going to be asked ultimately of us for this area of the budget. That's fine. That's why we have a process. That's why it just takes several months. But I want to flag that as an issue.
Bottom line, Bradley says,
we need to be just realistic about it and know that, you know, if we're having to spend more on medical, then I'm not sure we can do some of these other things.
Last month, Bradley took over as the new Florida Senate budget chair while an investigation into Senator Jack Latvala's sexual misconduct allegations is ongoing. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Kortner.
As the opioid epidemic swells, the tide of abused and neglected children coming into the state's foster care system, a Florida judge is trying to find them a forever home for the holidays. Tom Flanagan has more.
On December 20th, Circuit Judge David Gooding of the 4th Judicial Circuit will hold his annual Home for the Holidays adoption ceremony at the Duval County Courthouse. At last year's event, he approved 18 adoptions from infants to teens. He warns against allowing children to age out of foster care without a family.
Statistically speaking, a child who ages out of foster care is four times more likely to enter the adult criminal justice system, 17 times more likely to be homeless by age 21.
Gooding has performed roughly 4,000 adoptions. It's his passion. His father, also a judge, often brought home children for a night after they'd been removed from their homes. But now Gooding says child welfare is more challenging than when his dad was a judge.
Every single day, drugs are ruining people's lives. I always say if I had a magic wand, if I could wave and get rid of substance abuse, that's drugs and alcohol, I'd have to go find another job. I'd have to do a contract case or something because there wouldn't be enough work to keep me busy. But there's plenty of work to keep us busy now.
Especially in Jacksonville, one of the hot spots of Florida's opioid epidemic. When Governor Rick Scott signed a declaration that opioids were a state emergency last May, he directed Department of Children and Families officials to hold town hall-style meetings in four cities hard hit by the epidemic. Jacksonville was one of them.
I would say over 90% of our cases, there is a drug component to it.
Christine Meyer is the supervising attorney in the 4th Judicial Circuit's Guardian Ad Litem program. That very November day, she said, of 6 shelter hearings for children removed from their homes, 4 involved infants born to opioid addicts.
And so we had 4 newborn children today that were sheltered because of opioid addiction. It is absolutely an epidemic, and our program and our system is bursting at the seams because of it.
What's more, Meyer says, the consequences for children whose parents are addicts will last far into the future. The newborns suffer only the physical damage.
But the children that have seen their parents and have seen the effects that the opioids have had on their parents, witnessing that is trauma that I don't know that they will ever undo for them.
Over the past 2.5 years, as opioids have ravaged Florida, the number of children coming into the state foster care system has increased by 11%. The Guardian Ad Litem program is able to represent about 70% of them in dependency court. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Tom Flanagan.
Florida voters could be asked to ban oil drilling off Florida's coasts. The proposal got the green light Thursday before a Constitution Revision Commission panel with little opposition. The Florida legislature has already placed a moratorium on offshore oil drilling, but Commission member Jackie Thurlow Lippisch wants to make the prohibition permanent. And the way to do that is by asking Florida voters to add such language into the state's constitution. Her measure is Proposition 91, and it explicitly bans oil and gas drilling in Florida-owned waters on both the Gulf and Atlantic sides of the state. And she says the language is necessary because the legislature cannot be trusted to keep its word.
Unfortunately, the state of Florida has a history of a dysfunctional legislature, and they often take, in my opinion, too long to address very pressing issues that are timely.
Talk of a drilling ban escalated in Florida in the wake of the 2010 Deepwater Horizon oil spill, considered the largest of its kind in U.S. history. But just prior to that, notes Florida Wildlife Federation President Manly Fuller, Florida had been considering allowing drilling.
There was a significant effort to put oil and gas drilling in Florida's coastal waters to authorize that through the legislature. We opposed it, and it had a head of steam behind it, and then we had the Deepwater Horizon,
which threw cold water on that plan. Industry organizations like the Associated Industries of Florida and the Florida Petroleum Council Executive Director David Micah argue the proposed ban would hurt the oil and natural gas industry. And Micah points out that's where the gas to power cars and heat buildings comes from.
We have a role as Floridians to be obligated to that. I must point out, it's critical to point out, the existing Florida law in Chapter 377.242, Paragraph 5, specifically makes exploration production activities under a moratorium by statute. Not under a moratorium, under a prohibition by statute. So I'm not sure why we would want to do this additional step of putting it in the Constitution. It does it by meets and bounds.
But Thurlow Lippisch says it is a pressing issue, and she points to shifts in federal policy that suggest there could be more offshore drilling, not less, in the near future. And if commissioners needed more convincing, Thurlow Lippisch says look to the aftermath of the Deepwater Horizon and its impact on states like Alabama and Louisiana, where oil rigs are visible from the coast.
Let them have it in New Orleans. Let them have it in Mobile. We don't need it here. Part of our image is being the great, beautiful paradise, the state of Florida. Why would we want to be like them?
The measure still has to clear the Constitution Revision Commission's Declaration of Rights Committee. But if it does, it could be one of a number of measures Florida voters will be asked to decide in 2018. Still to come on Capitol Report. Experts say Florida has a good affordable housing funding model, but the number of people living in unaffordable housing is still growing.
The only issue is that the money has been swept quite regularly over the past number of years.
The Florida Supreme Court says it's too early to decide if the governor can name replacements for three retiring justices. If Scott goes through with the last-minute appointments, he could trigger a constitutional crisis.
It's at the peril of the citizens if our top officials don't take into consideration the seriousness of this issue.
And mopeds and motor scooters are becoming ubiquitous on college campuses across the state. But when it comes to safety, well...
If you get hit by a car and your head hits the asphalt, or if you simply just fall over it and it wipes out from underneath you, that's where a lot of the damage comes from and a lot of the injury comes from.
Welcome back to Capital Report. I'm Lynn Hatter. The number of Floridians living in what's considered unaffordable housing is growing. That's according to information from the University of Florida's Schimburg Center for Housing Studies. Now, Regan McCarthy reports a group of lawmakers is pushing a bill to change how the state's affordable housing funds are spent.
I haven't quite figured out where to put everything so I can get to it in my wheelchair. But, all this furniture came with it. They're going to have a little table over here that swings out so you can sit on the couch and eat or sit in your chair and eat.
Russell Wallace, a 70-year-old retiree, has just moved into his new home in the Dwellings community, a group of tiny homes meant to help people who otherwise would struggle to find housing, often for financial reasons. Wallace says the best thing about it for him is it's given him a place he feels he can call his own.
But I was looking for a place that when I came back to that it would be my home, not anybody else's.
The home is accessible and comes pre-stocked with everything a person might need, from pots and pans to linens and even a smart home assistant. So far, about a dozen are move-in ready, and officials are working to build more. But communities across the state are struggling to keep up with the need for the kind of houses the Dwelling provides. In Florida, the state distributes money for affordable housing projects from a pool called the Sadowski Trust Fund. The fund is supported by documentary stamp taxes, or money paid during real estate transactions. Experts say it's a good model for addressing affordable housing needs, but...
The only issue is that the money has been swapped quite regularly over the past number of years, and we hope to see an end come to that.
That's Jamie Ross, the president and CEO of the Florida Housing Coalition. She says over the years, lawmakers have used a state rule to sweep or take unappropriated money out of the Affordable Housing Trust Fund and send it to general revenue to be used elsewhere. But Ross says now that could be changing.
And it looks like this year we may get back to the norm, the way it's supposed to be, which is that all the money that goes into the trust funds is appropriated out by the Florida legislature so that all the 67 counties and the entitlement cities get the money that they need to help serve the affordable housing needs in their community, again, from ending homelessness to first-time homeownership.
Republican Senator Kathleen Pasadomo and Democratic Representative Sean Shaw have filed legislation to stop lawmakers from sweeping money out of the Sadowski Fund. Ross says she's been asked about what would happen if the state saw another economic downturn and lawmakers needed that money for other services. But she argues funding housing is the best thing the state can do for the economy.
It's an infrastructure for the community, as he said. You know, it's an economic driver. So it's in everybody's interest. It's not just in the interest of the person who needs an affordable rental, an affordable home. It's in everybody's interest that we have a segment of the housing market that is affordable.
Miami-Dade, Alachua, and Leon counties are among the top three counties with the highest percentage of their residents living in unaffordable housing. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
The Florida Supreme Court has tossed out a case challenging the governor's right to make last-minute appointments. Justices decided it's too soon to review because the appointments have not been made yet. Kate Payne reports without a clear ruling, some are worried about a potential constitutional crisis.
A year ago, Governor Rick Scott declared he would appoint three Supreme Court justices on his last day in office. Age limits are forcing Justices Barbara Pariente, Fred Lewis, and Peggy Quince into retirement.
Well, I'll appoint three more justices the morning I finish my term.
the League of Women Voters sued Scott over this, saying his terms and the justices expire at the same time. They argued the vacancies don't happen until after he's out of office, and it's the next governor's right to appoint. A lawyer for the group, John Mills, asked the Supreme Court to solve the potential crisis before it happens.
This is very bad for this court. You can avoid these problems right now. You can ensure the orderly conduct of our courts by resolving this right now, and I urge you to do so one way or the other.
But the court didn't do that. It decided it's too soon to say, because the appointments haven't been made yet. Justice Charles Kennedy said as much during the oral arguments in November.
It just seems like there's a lot of speculation that surrounds all of this. And I'm really kind of struggling to see how this is a ripe controversy for us to resolve.
In his dissent, Justice Fred Lewis wrote the court failed to protect Floridians from what he sees as blatantly unconstitutional actions. The Florida Constitution requires devoted protection, he wrote, and the Florida citizens deserve better. The decision means the court didn't settle an issue that has plagued administrations for decades.
My thinking is that as in past history, that the governor's term ends at the same time as the terms of the three retiring justices.
Dan Stengel is the former general counsel for Governor Lawton Chiles, who dealt with this problem too. Chiles and his successor Jeb Bush compromised and appointed current Justice Peggy Quince together. For many politicos, it's difficult to picture that happening again. Democratic candidates for governor have already said they'll sue Scott if he goes through with the plan. Stengel hopes Scott reconsiders to avoid a constitutional crisis.
It's at the peril of the citizens if our top officials don't take into consideration the seriousness of this issue and do underestimate the burden that would place on the citizens of Florida and our judicial institutions.
Floridians will once again have to wait and see what happens. In 2014, the Florida legislature tried and failed to give the power to the outgoing governor through a constitutional amendment. Whichever governor ends up making the appointments has the potential to reshape the balance of the court for decades. The outgoing justices skew liberal and form the court's 4-3 liberal majority. Their replacements could have a greater impact than either governor. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Kate Payne.
And finally, tonight, there are more than 500,000 motorcycles and mopeds registered in the state. They're a common vehicle for college students and relatively inexpensive and a pretty easy way to get around town. But some are questioning if they're safe. Taylor Knight has more.
Rayshawn White bought a moped last year because it was less expensive compared to a car and was convenient to use on campus. But in the 12 months he's been riding, he says he's been in 3 accidents.
The first accident was when I first got the scooter. There was construction on campus. They were building new dorms. And there was sand on the road. And I was going on a turn. And I guess I may have been going a little bit too fast for the turn. And so when I went through the sand, there was no traction for my tires. And it just slipped from under me.
According to the most recent data from the Florida Department of Highway Safety and Motor Vehicles, in 2015, there were 10,201 motorcycle, moped, bicycle, and scooter accidents. The department does not break them down individually. And those stats hit close to home for White, who got into his second accident on a wet, rainy day while running late to an exam.
And, a car slammed on brakes in front of me, and on the scooter, it's like, you can't really slam on brakes or you're going to flip off of it. So I tried to slow down pretty fast, and I go around the car, and the scooter lost control because the ground was so wet, and it just started flying, so I hopped off of it, and then I ended up falling on the ground pretty hard.
Gainesville Republican Senator Keith Perry says a lot of drivers like Rayshawn ignore the risk of riding a moped.
They know the risk, the dangers. I think that nobody thinks it's going to happen to them. If you thought it was going to happen to you, you wouldn't get on a moped.
Dress for the slide, not the ride.
Florida State University Police Officer Brett Sheffield.
Doesn't always look cool. It's not always, oh, I was just going down the street. But if you get hit by a car and your head hits the asphalt, or if you simply just fall over and it wipes out from underneath you, that's where a lot of the damage comes from and a lot of the injury comes from, is traumatic brain injury.
All right, so we're just looking at, these are half helmets, mostly used for the
customers that's under age of 21.
Scooterville employee Juan Williams sells about 20 mopeds and motorcycles throughout the week. In addition to selling motorcycles and mopeds, he's also selling the headgear to go with them and encourages customers to make the extra purchase.
You have numbers. You have different size helmets, for instance, half size helmets, three quarter helmets, full face helmets, like motorcycle helmets. You have those. You have goggles. You have face masks. You have chin straps. You have it's a number of headgear. So I recommend to cover the whole head.
And that brings us to Rayshawn White's third accident, which occurred on the way to a friend's house.
And their ground didn't have like a turning lane. So I was just in the middle of the street waiting for an opportunity to turn left. And I guess a car got tired of waiting behind me. And so right when I was about to turn, they went around me and ended up hitting my front tire.
While plenty of protective gear is available for mopeds and motorcycles, many riders like White risk their lives rather than wear it.
I never really wore my helmet. For one, it kind of looks crazy.
Senator Perry is sponsoring a bill that would change the helmet exemption from 16 to 21. Under the change, drivers over 21 must have an insurance policy for at least $10,000 to ride without a helmet.
My guess is you'll find a lot of students that will be glad that they're forced to wear a helmet. But, you know, this is speculation, but my guess is you find a lot of kids who just, you know, they're in a hurry. They don't want to do it. They don't want to mess up their hair. They think it doesn't look very cool.
That third accident really scared White, and a more recent tragedy has made him rethink his transportation options.
A guy that worked with me at the Leech ended up passing away in an accident on a scooter. And once that happened, I was like, yeah, I'd rather walk or ride the bus than even ride this thing.
And how did these accidents make you feel after getting involved with them?
I mean, the first accident, I felt like, yes, it's nothing. Just pay attention whenever it's sand on the ground. But the third one, when someone hit me, it was no fault of my own. I was like, yeah, the scooter life is a no-go for me.
I'm Taylor Knight.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Sasha Cordner, Nick Evans, Regan McCarthy, and Kate Payne. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Ken Smith, and I'm Lynn Hatter. Tom Flanagan will be back next week. Please join us each Friday for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following: The Able Trust, dedicated to connecting businesses and workers with disabilities. Businesses are encouraged to recruit, interview, and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. Abletrust.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.